This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Close your eyes, exhale, feel your body relax, and let go of whatever you're carrying today.
Well, I'm letting go of the worry that I wouldn't get my new contacts in time for this class. I got them delivered free from 1-800-CONTACTS. Oh my gosh, they're so fast.
And breathe.
Oh, sorry. I almost couldn't breathe when I saw the discount they gave me on my first order. Oh, sorry. Namaste.
Visit 1-800-CONTACTS.com today to save on your first order.
1-800-CONTACTS.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, brought to you by Savage Arms. Now, Savage has come out with a new model, and that model is the 110 Ultralight. At under 6 pounds, the 110 Ultralight is designed to combat elevation and the elements while maintaining the performance of a factory blueprinted Savage 110 Action. This comes in a variety of calibers. It has a gray AccuFinish stock with adjustable comb height. This is an awesome rifle, and basically Savage is at it again. These guys have done amazing things in the past, and now they're doing amazing things in the future. If you want to find out more information about the 110 Ultralight, visit savagearms.com.
Welcome to the Land and Legacy Podcast. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
This is your number one resource for all things land.
If you're interested in conservation, habitat management, hunting strategy, and rural real estate, this is the podcast for you.
All right, welcome back, Land and Legacy Podcast. Once again, another Tello podcast.
This is becoming very popular for us.
Yeah, and it probably is not going to change anytime soon based on our travel schedule. So
no, not at all.
And I don't know if people are enjoying it or not, but they heard it over on the, I don't know which podcast they listened to this week, but they're going to hear birds in the background here at my end. So
might hear some frogs or me trying to swat mosquitoes. I'm lucky enough to be sitting close to the edge of the water right now.
Yeah, not to sound crude, but when you said "hear you squat," I was like, "We don't want to hear that. Let's end it if we have to go that route."
Swat mosquitoes.
Yeah, mosquitoes. I recorded last night with Kyle for our other podcast, yeah. And by the end of it, I had mosquitoes all over me. So I'm going to try. I don't know how long we'll make this podcast, but we definitely have several things we want to discuss, but hopefully we won't be going all the way till 9:30 like I did yesterday with him. So anyway, before we get kicked off, though, we just want to remind you guys of an awesome opportunity and a shout-out to a company that makes this podcast possible, Vortex Optics. You can check them out at vortexoptics.com. Go check out their store, their shop tab, where you can find all kinds of awesome apparel and accessories, and use the promo code LEGACY20 for 20% off in their store front for all things apparel.
I know you've probably been starting to see a lot of pictures and texts come through from clients and friends sending antlers growing. And so the use of spotting scopes in the summer, or people tuning up their bows and just kind of getting in that sequence of practicing, utilizing rangefinder stuff. So it's definitely the optics side of things are kind of coming back in preparations for deer season. So it's funny how fast and quick summer's approach, but yeah. Definitely good to keep that in mind.
I've had the text come through a couple times. You guys found any big deer on camera yet? You got any big deer on picture? I'm like, man, our schedules are so busy right now. I'm just trying to see my daughter and wife, let alone get pictures of a big deer.
Yep. Yeah. So, no, it's it has been wide open, I will say. Very wide open.
Yeah. Well, if you're getting on the market for rangefinder, binoculars, rifle scopes, spotting scopes, check out vortexoptics.com. And also check out, if you're still on the fence, their VIP warranty. Yes. I have had great success with that warranty, and you will too. So check them out. All right, Matt. You know, the content for this podcast is endless. There is really not a week that we don't have something to talk about. Now, it may take a few weeks to take a thought or an idea to develop into a full podcast, but, you know, we can have things. We can go to one property visit. Oh, that's what we need to talk about this week. And
Certainly. And
in 24 hours have a full podcast ready. Or there might be some that develop over time, and this has been one that's kind of developed over time. There's been some times where we're like, man, we really need to get that one out there, but timing isn't right or whatever. But it's as we kind of have progressed out of turkey season, progressed out of the heat of food plot season, we're getting back into a lot of just people in the woods. I think they're trying to get stands trimmed or stands hung before really the heat of the summer kicks in, even though it feels like it's already here. I think there's just a lot of people in the woods right now trying to prepare for deer season.
There is, and we've gone through the full flush, let's say, of spring green up across the country. So everything is either full leaf out and or in the blooming stage. So it's the time to practice plant identification. And we could go on and on and on and on about the importance of that. And we'll obviously touch on plant identification and what that leads to for us in making management decisions. But it's just like working out. If you're not out there testing yourself, or if you're not out there working at it, trying to improve or working that muscle or whatever it is, you can make whatever analogy you'd like, but it's a skill, and that skill's got to be tested. And this is the time frame to be able to do that. And that knowledge is, you cannot make sound management decisions without having it. You're guessing.
No.
At best, let's say, without knowing what is growing on a property, what should be growing, what's good and what's bad. It's just, but it takes time. It takes practice. And I think that's the most important thing, is like a lot of people who may not have that skill very well honed are saying, I just don't even know where to begin.
Yeah.
Well, and it's humble beginnings. You
man, I'm an agriculture major. I didn't take... Mm-hmm. I did take a botany class, but it was an intro to botany, so it really didn't get into cataloging plant communities or plant species at all.
It's funny because that's the only plant class I had, was plant taxonomy.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you have biology and you understand plant function and all these different things, but like when it came to identifying and trying to, you know, break down and families and things like that, I had one course. One.
Yep. I had a very, very basic one. And so that's why when, like, what we do for a living in this land consulting realm is so broad, there's so many sides of it, that it would be really, really difficult for either one of us to be just a full-fledged botanist at what we do. We could list out a ton of plants, but we would probably be limited at whether deer prefer it or whether it's good for quail or good for turkeys or overall what's it's important for from a cover aspect. We probably wouldn't be any good at it, but we try to blend botany with ecology, with agronomy, with agriculture, with financial management for the properties. Like, we're pretty well a jack of all trades and probably a master of none. But at the same time, we blend everything together where we really understand plants and their names, but outside of, you know, if you really try to dive in and understand certain things about it or why it's this way, you're going to get lost in the bushes real quick and not really, you're going to be too focused on that and not big picture of how that relates back to general ecology or land management. And it's very, very difficult to, you would be very hard pressed in this lifetime to pick up plant ID book or whatever and start learning plants and try to go really, really in depth of botany or plant taxonomy about, you know, all the things that people take in college and try to learn that in the middle part of your life.
Sure.
Because then you would be losing focus of big picture. And, I guess I should say all that because don't get too overwhelmed because we're not masters at this either, but we do it every single day. And now we're pretty doggone good at IDing plants.
Yeah, absolutely. And can do so from in like every region of the country. That's great. But that took time and that took being out there and testing ourselves and making, like, when we see something that we don't often see or whatnot, it meant that we take a picture of it and we go back and we figure it out. And then you just catalog that back into the memory. But, you know, I can't, like, on the side, you know, time, which neither you or I have, but on side time, can't go and just, like, become a fantastic, you know, money manager. Like, we're not going to go and be able to understand global economy and stock markets like someone who does that on a daily basis. But that's not necessarily the end goal. As a landowner, you don't have to know every single plant. What we're just saying and trying to communicate is know some, and we're going to go through these on the podcast today. Know five in your region, five trees, like five shrubs, five forbs, and five different grasses that would be growing in your region that probably to some degree will relate to good or sound wildlife habitat. Once you know those, grow off of that base. That's 20 species. 20. That's not crazy difficult. I mean, there's 75 plus different species of goldenrods, right?
Yeah.
We're just saying we just want 20 of different trees, shrubs, grasses, forbs, just in your region. But it would be like, I guess, Adam, if I said, hey, I've got $20,000 to invest, and I go to you and say, how should I invest it? And you don't know the first thing about the market. Well, you're just guessing at that point when trying to make decisions about what to do with that money, right?
Yep.
Same thing with plant and land management. Like, if you can't at the basis identify some species, then it's important to be able to say, okay, I got to start here and then work your way through the different steps that we're going to go through today.
Yeah. It's very difficult. Like, I think sometimes I see it where we really get caught up on, because that's what we do. We're not just land managers, but we're also management land management advisors, and sure. that doesn't go from just different plants, good or bad. That goes with any kind of time management, financial management, all the things to basically, in simple terms, make the most productive landscape in the shortest amount of time with the least amount of money.
Mm-hmm. And efficiency. That's, increased efficiency.
That's it. And we want to turn this property around quickly and cheap. And mm-hmm. sometimes we see too much focus on this variety of corn or that variety of soybean, or should I add this many pounds of this plant in a food plot? And once again, the food plots probably don't make up a majority of your landscape. Sure. But learning yep. the tree species, there's a very good chance that during this podcast, a bird is going to poop on me. Because I'm sitting here looking at a whole cluster of baby robins fly right above me because my mulberry, my red mulberry, is ripe. And they're swarming in, and they're sitting above me. And I got my laptop out.
Nice.
And so I'm just sitting here going, when's it going to happen? But, you know, we focus, once again, our priorities are wrong. We've bought in, and we've listened to what makes the best food plot, what's the best this or that, when in reality there's a majority of our farm is made up of species that we're talking about today. Trees, shrubs, grasses, forbs, sedges, whatever it is, whatever your landscape is, there is a list of species that, although there's a long, long list of species that are native to your area or native or found in your neighborhood, you can really condense it into a 80 grit type learning system for mm-hmm. the majority species on your place.
And I promise you, if you start and digest with the 80 grit, you will move to 120 grit and then 150 grit and finish at 220 grit, because it's learning these plants and learning their function and how they relate to your goals or wildlife in your region, or if they don't, but having that knowledge and then going into a property and knowing what to do and knowing what you're looking at, like, instead of just saying that's a tree, you're saying that's this type of tree. It flowers now, it doesn't produce, or it does produce mast at this rate or this consistency, and the mast then produces forage for XXX of these types of critters.
Yeah.
But once you have that information, you can go and cover your property and just know, like, when these different types of wildlife are going to be frequenting yeah. those acres based on what's growing there. And, like, that's,
and in
that's
simple
so
terms,
powerful.
You can really just say, okay, oak tree, white oak family. Now that's simple. Are the leaves rounded or are they pointy?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, oak tree, is it positive, neutral, or negative for wildlife? And uh-huh. and just in doing that, you're ahead of the game. I don't know the first thing about a lot of things.
right.
I just sold my old vehicle yesterday that I've drove forever, and you know, they were asking me questions about it, and I was just like, fellas, I am clueless. When that hood pops up, all I know is, like Jeff Foxworthy's joke, woo, there's a lot of parts in there. Oh, dang, there's a lot of hot parts. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
But when it comes to plants, this is just something I've learned, taught myself through just repetitive learning and through
repetition.
My dad and my brother, really just over time bouncing and teaching. And, man, that's really what's built up the catalog in my head of different plants, and I still don't know all of them. There's still plants to this day when I visit a property that it's like, whoa, that one is different. But it's never mm-hmm. one that's a majority owner. It's never
sure.
a majority owner of the stock in that area. It's always the
yeah.
little bitty one that showed up and was like, yikes, I really don't know, but I'm going to learn it, and I won't forget
yep.
it.
I'm going to put that one in the memory bank.
It's 2020. There has never been a time to learn plants easier than now.
I'll tell you this much. before apps and everything came out, you had to want to learn plants. Like, you were having to go through dichotomous keys. You were having to look at plants. You were having to take samples and dry them and study them. Like, it was a chore. Now, you got it at the your fingertip. I mean, information is right there.
Unless you're sporting a flip phone, and there's not many of you out there.
Not many,
but
no.
If you've got a smartphone, you can just put in plant identification, and there's a long list of apps. And I'll just read, mm-hmm. like, picture this. Plant Snap, Plant Identification, Plant Net, Plant Identification, Planta. I mean, Nature ID. And then I think my favorite is iNaturalist, mm-hmm. just because it's not just plants. But it's, and I even see an app pop up on my Facebook, yeah. I have ads that pop up for plant apps. You know, you go and talk about shoes, you're going to get a whole bunch of ads that pop up that say, you know, whatever, Nike, Adidas, Converse, all these ads from those companies that you talked about pop up on your Facebook page or on different sites that you're visiting in banner ads. Mine are plant disease apps. If that tells you anything about what I talk about. You know, it's never been easier to learn plants. And there's a lot of really awesome books. There's a lot of really awesome websites. But, man, the technology, as much as we talk bad about it in society, when it comes to learning plants, it's amazing.
And knowledge is power. And I'll share this example. So earlier in this week, I was working with several new folks throughout Virginia and one in Maryland. And the reason, like, right before recording this podcast, it worked out well, but that gentleman texted me and he's like, man, I've gone back and started really listening to a lot of the podcast, but since you were on site, we spent a very large majority of the day just walking. And it wasn't a very big property, but we saw, like, I'm not going to say every square inch, but every square foot of it. Like, it was very, very thorough, but which is great. And we worked and worked and worked through identifying the plants that were growing there on the site current day.
How many miles did you check to see how many miles you walked?
No, I did not. But it was 30 acres and laid out kind of funny. I would say, I don't know, maybe five or so on that 30 acres.
Yeah, I walked, what day was it? Oh, man, I forget. I lose track of days, but I think Thursday I walked 9.5 miles mm-hmm. on a consult.
Yeah. I mean, but how do you know what's growing there unless you do it, right? You can't just imagine. That's why we stress so importantly on-site consultation to be able to make the detail of recommendations that we do, because we have to know what's on site. We can't just guess or just imagine. But the client texting is like, you know, I started going back, and as I'm going through the podcast, now that you were there and you were showing me like what these different examples were that I've heard referenced in a podcast, and then I go back and listen to the same one, it clicks that much more, because now he knows what's growing there, and he knows how to like evaluate maybe the health of a tree or maybe where sunlight started to come through the canopy and you had a great response maybe versus a bad response. But it's the illustration is knowledge of what's growing there is powerful for him to now understand the property. And then when he goes and listens to additional podcasts, he's able to grasp more. So we're very appreciative, obviously, of everyone who listens, and we hear a lot of great comments of, guys, you know, this is fantastic information. But there is an example of someone who felt the same, but then as he continued to dive deeper in the knowledge, he was able to understand even more of what it was we were saying and get more education from just re-listening to a podcast he's already listened to before. Yeah. And so it's like once you get back to, let's say, the foundation of being able to make sound management decisions on a given property, you're going to get and understand so much more through the next process. And that's just step one. Just know what's growing on site first and foremost.
Absolutely.
And then you'll get and just it'll be like mind-blowing and captivating that again you just won't stop trying to learn all these new plants.
Yeah. I mean, if you just go out on your farm and you're like, okay, let's take an inventory of the timber, and you just walk pretty quickly into that, you should start being able to identify the dominating species. Mm-hmm. And you should mm-hmm. be able to just say, okay, I've seen that tree and that tree over and over and over again. And then yes. if you do it a little bit again, a little bit later, you know, challenge yourself. 6 months from now, I want to know five more tree species. And it's really, once you find in, you know, certain trees, hackberry, that one is really easy to identify based on the bark. Mm-hmm. You know, white oak is really easy to identify based on the color of the bark. And then the leaf shape. Bur oak is easy to identify based on the bark and the overall just shape of the tree.
The structure of the limbs and the branches. And that was a great comment to make, because another group of folks that I work with this week, they were asking, you know, like, I know some, and it's great right now for me because it's growing season, and they're like, I can see the leaves. I can kind of double check everything with the leaves, but they're nervous because, you know, a lot of it's more preferred to cut, you know, seasonality wise in the winter time frame because it's not hot and crazy ridiculous sweating, right? But they're like, I feel like my knowledge level just is going to decrease a lot. So how do you tell just by the bark some of the differences between these trees? Because now if you lose leaves, sometimes it can become difficult. You take a tulip poplar, for example, a tulip poplar at age 5 and then 15 and then 60 at eye level, they all look completely different. Like you would say, oh, those are all different trees if you're just novice and going in trying to identify by the bark. But when you're looking at a tree, you also have to evaluate that structure of the tree, the growing tendencies of that tree. What does it look like? Because the bur oak screams at you. Well, we can see that thing from 100 yards away or 200 yards away. Just looking at branch structure, you're like, oh my gosh, look at that thing. It's a beautiful, gorgeous, mighty bur oak. It's like the dead giveaway. Same thing with tulip poplar. In most sites, it's a dead giveaway.
Yep. And even sycamore. Yeah. You know, sycamores, I wouldn't have to ever look at the leaf and go, ah, that's sycamore.
Right.
But it changes from a young sycamore to a more mature sycamore based on that white, shiny bark.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, just over time, fellas, there's even days where even now, we've been on 28 states. We've consulted just in Atlanta Legacy, and even before that with other companies, consulted now in 10 years for me.
Yeah.
And that's just as a I hate that word, but as a professional consultant, even before then, like just overall learning species had been going on, but there's still to this day where I'll look at a tree and be like, oh, yikes, is this a chinkapin oak or is this a swamp white oak?
Mm-hmm.
Yikes. Yeah. Trying to look up in the leaves, like. Even we do this for a living, there's times where it's like, yikes, that is a little bit, and I'm not ashamed to say it because it should inspire you guys to be like, you know what, I can do this too. I can learn my trees. I can learn my plants. I can do this.
But you can't do it unless you intentionally, and it's really important, intentionally go out to try and learn. If you just say every Saturday I'm going to go to the farm, and, you know, I'll slow down on the buggy and I won't drive as fast and I'll look at some trees, that's not going to do it. It is take pictures, right? Once you learn the species, write the name down and then just put it to memory. Every time you go out there, oh, yep, there's that black gum again. I don't see that as often. Or maybe there's that sugar maple versus that red maple over there. Whatever it is, you have to be intentional with learning it to really grasp it and hang on to that knowledge. Once you have the knowledge, test yourself. I guess that same exact situation, Adam, you're talking about swamp versus chinkapin oak. I looked at trees for a minute in Oklahoma a couple of weeks ago because I was like, that looks very, very swamp white oak. Not structure-wise, you know, like some chinkapins have a very gnarly, kind of twisted, not very straight trees to form.
Yep,
I'm looking at
that's only in the Ozarks,
stand. Yeah, and I'm looking at a beautiful, beautiful structured chinkapin, but it made me second guess and say,
"Yeah, you had to almost look up the range of swamp white oak to make sure." I'm not just seeing things. Yeah, I'm not just seeing things here, am I? Yeah,
absolutely. I sure did, and I was like, "Well, no, that had to have been a chinkapin, but it was just it had all the characteristics of potentially being a swamp," and it made me second guess it. But then confirmation, we confirm all the time. How we got obviously group text between you, me, and Chad, and it's daily. We're sharing pictures of all the silly stuff that we see out there. We're like, you guys know what this one is, or look what I saw today. Here's a cool one in this this different type of site. So like even when you're looking at trying to identify those plants, also take into account maybe the general amount of sunlight or how upland or elevation or the aspect of the slope. Catalog that in your memory too, because then that may help you determine something else down the road as to, oh, I saw this in a very similar site, so it has the same conditions. Oh, it probably is that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of that tree that popped up on the Prairie Hollow property this winter. Went back and saw it. American bladder pod, isn't that what I told
bladder
you it was?
Pod. Yeah.
American bladder pod. I can honestly say I'd never seen it. And it basically grows in undisturbed sites that are moist, and which is exactly what that site was. But man, the growth structure in the pods almost made us think invasive. But we ended up finally figuring out what it was and was like, whew, don't have to worry about going and killing that one.
But that's the perfect example right there, exactly what you said of the steps. It's first I need to identify what it is. Before you do absolutely anything, before you grab the chainsaw, before you grab an herbicide, because guys, you shouldn't be grabbing any herbicide until you know what tree it is.
Yeah.
Not all of them work the exact same way, or not every herbicide is going to cover that given tree species. So like, there's not just this incredibly broad brush to paint across the board with all the species that you're going to come in contact with. And so out of the gate, the ID is the most important thing to get right. Then you say, okay, here's what it is. Oh, it's a cool name that I don't see that much. I'm not going to do anything to it. Let it grow. Let that site stay undisturbed and see what happens down the road. It's kind of neat. It's kind of cool to see it, right?
Yep.
Like, take someone else back here who's never seen it before and show them this because of this site. It's a teaching moment then at that point. But you could have just as easily said, oh, man, it looks like it might have come from overseas. I'm cutting the thing down and killing it.
Yeah. I think wow. Shout out to QDMA. I think Lindsay Thomas Jr. wrote an article a year or two ago on hinge cutting. It basically said, rule number one, if you don't know what species you're cutting, put the chainsaw down.
Put it down. Put it down. Absolutely.
Yep. And that's why learning your trees, learning your plants is important, because it's very hard to ever – you shouldn't have management goals. You shouldn't have things planned out if you don't even know what's growing there to start with. Because this is what I see so much, and it makes me cringe, but – I see, doggone it, too many times, old, very productive old fields get cut up, disc up, plowed up, sprayed up to plant a mediocre food plot.
Yes.
I see it far too often, and it's just doggone it, it needs to end. We're hearing too many discussions. We've had too many people on the podcast talking about declining native birds, declining Bob Whites, declining turkey numbers, all these things, and yet we turn around and plant something of a non-native that's not nearly as beneficial to those things we just listed in decline as the old field.
Yeah, not nearly as probably numerous on the landscape as those acres need to be. That you know what you removed is so critical, but then you take a field that was weeds that was so beneficial that you didn't even know what the weeds were growing, plant it in a food plot, and then cuss the weeds that come in. And it's like, well, it was good before. It was so good before,
and it didn't cost you anything.
Know what you had. You didn't know what you had to begin with.
It should be almost mandatory that if you get a new lease or you buy a property or you get access to a new piece of ground, you can't do anything for a year and you have to catalog five species, the five dominating species of each type of plant.
Sure.
With trees, shrubs, forbs, grasses, all that stuff. Because so many times in the first out of the gate, mistakes happen before we even realize what we had.
Yeah, and it's easy to do that, right? You look before you get on site, and or I think you said lease or buy.
Yep.
Right.
Yep.
But buying, absolutely, you know, because there's a lot of things when you're buying a property. Number one, there's a lot of money at risk here, right? That I've got goals and I want to accomplish those goals, but there's other factors that play into whether this is the right piece of property or not. Maybe it is. It's the right size, or maybe it's got a good shape, or maybe it's the right price, or maybe it is all those things, or maybe it's got a cool water feature. But
here's an analogy for you.
Hold on real quick. If all the plant species grow in there are junk, then I don't care what the rest of those other factors were that you know, check the box. It's not going to do it for you. That property is not going to be sufficient.
For many people.
For what it is you're trying to do.
Yeah, it is. You end up thinking you're going to go three steps forward, but you end up going eight steps back because
sure.
You didn't take that time to really understand what was there. And, you know, if with buying land, oftentimes for a lot of people, it's the biggest investment they make in life. It's the one that they really stick their neck out to make that purchase. But you wouldn't go out and buy a Ferrari or a, I want to list out all the names of the cars that I don't know.
Corvette.
Yeah. I was trying to go like way even better, even more. What is the ones where the doors go up? Lamborghini.
Yeah.
You wouldn't go buy a Lamborghini and spend $500,000 on a sports car to not even take the time to realize what kind of motor oil it takes,
yeah,
or how often you need to change it. You wouldn't do that because you realize that investment, you're just corroding away that investment. You're damaging it. So why do we purchase land and not put that same value on learning the aspects of that land and move forward the right way and the appropriate way? And so if you're considering buying a farm, how many times, Matt, do we see people buy a farm in real estate and they have these certain goals, but yet they didn't ID the trees or the invasive species that have made up 70% of the understory of the forest?
Yeah. Well, and here's the thing, and everyone says it, right? Yeah, and the layout or shape of a property is important. But at the same time, the shape's important. Deer don't care about the shape of your property. It's a property line, right?
No.
They don't care. Doesn't make a difference. It's what's growing there.
Unless you're buying a high fence.
Or what you can get to grow there. Exactly. But that's what's actually important as to, and you can't, you know, buying sight unseen is scary. Or buying, you know, trusting an agent who you don't know personally or you don't know, knows their stuff.
Yeah.
Is very risky, honestly.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Risky. You see that slope right there? It's chocked full of Eastern Red Cedar. Deer love that Eastern Red Cedar. They get all in there and or yeah, that autumn olive stuff. Boy, that's really great. I mean, there's nothing better for whitetail deer.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Right. I mean, or you can occasionally see browse on multiflora rose, or you're not even looking at the tree of heaven that's growing along the edge of a field, or the stilt grass that came in after a timber harvest, whatever the case may be.
Yeah, you're drinking their Kool-Aid and come to find out it's poison.
Sure. I mean, I would say probably, Adam, on people who have hired us to come with them on showings to represent them or just be a voice of reason. we have lost way more money from a commission standpoint than we have ever gained by steering them away from properties, because it based on their goals and based on what that property had to offer on the vegetation that was growing there or what we could get to grow there, it wasn't going to do it.
No. Yeah, it's definitely the case. It's just like, you know, you buy a farm that's chocked full of invasives, it's like buying a car that's chocked full of rust. It's just something you're going to have to either really take a lot of work to fix, or you're never going to really reach the goals or have the investment quality that you were hoping for.
Sure.
So as you move forward, you bought a farm and you own a farm, you're really getting into this, you got a new lease, man, we can't emphasize enough to learn your plant species. And you don't have to learn every single one of them, because that's an impossible task. But you can at least learn the majority stakeholders. You know, in the Ozarks, you can learn the common hickories and the common oaks and some of the understory trees, and really be less than 30 species with that total.
Easy.
And so it's really, really simple. And I use this analogy with Matt before we got started that, you know, there was a day that I used to really enjoy golf. There was a day that I had time. And to be a better golfer, you have to learn your clubs. You have to learn what's in the bag. To be a better fisherman, you have to know the lures that are in your tackle box. So why do we sometimes go into land wanting to be a better hunter, a better land manager, and not take the time to learn our species and to learn which ones are positive, negative, or neutral?
Yes, which is the next step, but that does take time. But a lot of times, again, we do a podcast just, I don't know, wasn't last week, but the week before maybe, it was just open your eyes. You're a land manager with the title. And that was just to state, hey, as you guys are walking around, you tell me if deer are using it. What's the deer sign in that region? Is there sign?
Yeah.
You can identify this stuff. You can, but you just have to look at things critically and with a different perspective. But once again, once you see certain plants growing, or more importantly, plant communities growing, you will certainly see, oh, wow, well, this is going to have a lot of deer activity, or this is going to have a lot of turkey activity or quail activity, just because I can see, well, look at what we've got. Look what we've got growing just right here before our eyes. Of course this is going to be great. But just looking at topography and just looking at an aerial photo, you don't know that. And just by driving around a property and liking the road system and where some food plots are located doesn't mean that there's going to be great success there.
Yep, for sure.
So real quick, I would like to just cover like five Forbs that we see a lot across the country. Just a little bit of homework for everyone to say, go find those Forbs online, write them down, text them to yourself, email them to yourself as you're listening, research them, Google search, take a snapshot of those images, put them in your brain, go find them on the property next time. And then once you take those five, go learn another five, and then another five, and another five. But for me, stuff that we see most commonly, I mean, we're talking most times Texas to, you know, up even up through so many of the northern regions. But we can go and find pokeweed. We can find greenbrier. We can find Desmodium. We can find, I don't have it on my phone on speaker right now. So
you can find Blackberry. And then also the main one, and the varieties may change, but at the same time, you know, your base is this. So ragweed, and you go west, and you may be looking at Western ragweed, which looks pretty similar to common ragweed. But man, common ragweed you can find in a lot of places where there's white-tailed deer. And so between those five, oh man. And if you're, I'll throw out another one, because if you're in a wet site, you may find stinging nettle or jewelweed.
Yes.
One of those two.
Yes.
And it's just so, you know, just learn those. Look those up. Google them up. Pause it. Backtrack. Rewind. Listen to the ones we just listed, or we'll list it again. Blackberry, Desmodium, or your stick tights. Whatever, it's hard to say because there's so many different names for Desmodium, but other common names. But then pokeweed or pokeberry, some people call it, ragweed, common ragweed, and then greenbrier. And between those five, you can go and just look those up and go, okay, I think I've seen that on my farm before. And what I do a lot, too, is if I find a plant, I look at the native range. Or if I hear about somebody talk about it, I just make sure it's one that I can find in my range. So go to Google and just plug in common ragweed native range. There's probably going to be a USDA tab that pulls it up.
Yep. All of those plants, though, that were named, very positive. Very positive from a deer standpoint. So
and many other species, too.
Yeah, certainly many others. But very positive right out the get-go for deer. Another one, like most people are good with oaks, hickories, and it slowly, sharply starts to fade off. But let's just remove those from the tree standpoint. But from other trees, I think that have a lot of other wildlife benefits that we often see in many different places across the country. We will see red maple. We will see American elm or and winged elm, which is, they're different, but American elm, winged elm, and black gum, and or some other ones that come there. American dogwood. Wow.
Yeah.
Those are some fantastic.
Or flowering dogwood.
Yeah,
flowering dogwood. And the thing about the thing too is there's a little bit of like red maple maybe lumped in as just soft maple. Depending on your region, but just try to identify the common maples on your farm. And it could be sugar maple. It could be even silver maple, depending on the site. But just try to find the common maple for your part of the world and in your farm. And you can do this. Another tip would be just, you know, if you're in Illinois, Google native shrubs to northern Illinois or native shrubs to southern Illinois, and you'll find somebody talk, and you can go to multiple websites, and you'll start averaging out, okay, these are listed over and over and over. And then just write those down on your notepad, and then Google those just to look at all the different pictures and find out if, by golly, those are what I have on my farm. And, man, you can learn so much with technology now, and just trying to, between technology and a willingness to learn, the sky's the limit.
Oh, it totally is. And that's the thing is the knowledge behind all this is the power and the decision-making power as to what the right decision to do, what the right technique to implement is. You've got to start with the ID, and then you can move into those, you know, down the line questions that you'll ask yourself. What do I do here? What would I recommend to someone else maybe that would have this property or this site? What would yield the best result in this area for this portion of the property with these species that I have to work with? Because like we talked about, Adam, pre-show, but the recommendation to add species to the property is very small.
Yeah, the majority, the percentage is probably less than 30% of the time where we're adding, we're trying to plant and add things, because a lot of times they're just suppressed by closed canopy forests, suppressed by non-natives, whatever it may be, suppressed because there hadn't been fire. There's just so many times they're there, but they're not really flourishing. And we've mm-hmm. said this before, but use an analogy that you're a business owner and your farm is your company. And within each company, you'll probably, business owners will laugh and probably hopefully not point too many fingers, but you realize that there's really good employees and sometimes there's really bad employees. Or there's just lukewarm employees that are there. They're kind of treading water, waiting for retirement, but they're not really invested. And sometimes bad employees either get fired or you have to put them in a different role. And so mm-hmm. each plant, each acre is a employee within your business. And those plants are either good employees or bad employees. And so they're either helping you reach your goals or they're helping drag you down so you don't reach your goals. And sometimes if they're a bad employee and they're not allowing you to reach your goal, you either have to fire them, which would be kill and remove from sight, or change their role. So if it's a big 20-foot tree that's taking up a lot of nutrients and a lot of resources, but changing the role as in cut it down or hinge it over, and now it provides a lot of woody browse and better cover, now it's helping you reach your goals. And so we just had to change it from the marketing team to the down in the warehouse.
Sales team.
Yeah. And so that's really just, man, just look at it from a business. I don't think enough landowners look at their farm as a business. And I really, as much as some people don't like that analogy or like the idea of looking at it and saying, well, I don't need to make money. Well, fellas, there's money to be made on a resource. Anytime you have a resource, if you're not making money, that's because you haven't looked at it enough or looked at it from a different perspective. But there's the ability to make money off of it, or at least not spend as much money on it.
Sure, and it may not change anybody's life from the income that comes from it, but it doesn't mean it should just be wasted or thrown away. That's just silly. So, yeah, but all in all, I think that really wraps up the importance of plant identification.
And well, we didn't even list out grasses or shrubs.
No, we didn't.
Or common trees. You need to get your notes in front of you, man. So, you know, common grasses that you could even list out five of the non-natives that you could coastal Bermuda, Bahia grass down south, or Johnson grass, three down there. Mm-hmm. Or you could go mm-hmm. the Midwest and say it's either tall fescue, Timothy grass, orchard grass, or brome, smooth brome. And just in those seven, my gosh, that makes a pretty big chunk. It's a pretty big swath across the country. And those are the non-natives. If you have them, get rid of them.
Those are the non-natives. But truthfully, when you go east of the Mississippi, many of the open areas, they're not in native grasses anymore, unless they've been replanted. A lot of times those areas have been very intensely dissed or disturbed, and there are cool season grasses that have taken over. So if you're east of Mississippi, I'm not saying this, you know, across the board, but you're going to be dealing with the smooth brome, fescue, orchard grass, and Timothy a lot. And the broomsedge comes up everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Being
which is a native. Yep.
You know, and so
you see it everywhere.
Your broomsedge is very common. A lot of people call it sage grass. If you guys are going, I've never heard of that one. If you've heard of sage grass, we're talking about the same thing most likely. And then another common one that you see a lot in wet, cooler areas would be either river oats or one of our wild ryes. Those two are pretty doggone common. But then you've got little blue stem or big blue stem or switchgrass.
Indian grass.
All three of those, or four of those now, are very common across the country, but probably not as common as they should be on individual farms due to bad management. But they're pretty common, so if you look around, go to some state ground, you'll probably be able to find some.
Absolutely.
Man, then you go into the shrubs, and the shrubs vary with region, so we're going to do the same thing. But some of the common ones, spice bush, I mean, I was looking at spice bush. We've got a lot on our farm. We manage it with fire. It's important for some pollinators, but at the same time, if not managed, it can be a little bit more common in the understory. Pretty good cover, but you know, spice bush has a pretty big range, so you could probably find it
everywhere.
Hazelnuts,
I found a lot out here.
Hazelnuts are like a sleeper. People don't realize how common they are. The best time to find them would be probably blooming in early spring. Squirrels usually get the nuts if they actually make the nuts. And then American plum, obviously. Any of our sumacs, smooth, winged.
And they're everywhere.
Yeah. You know, sumacs are very common. And then just any of the dogwoods. You could lump in gray dogwood, flowering dogwood, rough
Silky,
leaf, dogwood.
Red
yeah.
Azure.
All those dogwoods. And so it depends on which region. And then another common one anywhere down south would be American beautyberry. That just, you know, just Google native shrubs to your part of the state, your part of the world, and you'll get a pretty good list. And say, I'm going to go find some. It may sound simple, but if your goal was to spend Saturday putting corn in
Shutters.
Feeders putting up mock scrapes or, I don't know, list out anything that takes a lot of time that doesn't result in great results. Now, compare that to spending the Saturday learning plant species on your farm. It's a way better time investment for you to learn your plant species.
Without a doubt.
It may not seem like it on the first Saturday, but a year later, I can guarantee you it's going to be your time is better served. Now, before we get, we do need to cover trees.
Yep.
This could be, you know, if you're in part of the world where, you know, you're in native grassland, you're in Oklahoma, parts of Kansas, Nebraska, Texas, South Dakota, Minnesota. I should list out, and after we look at where a lot of our listeners come from, I have to list out states that I wouldn't normally throw in there, like Minnesota and places like that. So if you're in one of those, it could be pretty easy to learn trees because you don't have many to learn anyway.
Sure.
So just try to learn. Google your native, you know, learn what your native majority holder would be. So like the Ozarks, oak hickory forest. That's what most of the Ozarks is in our part of the world. And so we learn our oaks first. So we would basically learn what are the white oak family, what are the red oak families. Let's look at leaves and learn which ones are pointy and which ones are rounded. Okay, now I have white oaks, the actual white oak tree, then I have post oaks, then I have chinkapin oak. And I could be done right there. And then I could say red oaks, black oak, red oak. Southern red. All right, there we go. Or northern red. Just learn the ones in your region. And, man, the oaks are pretty common in a lot of places. So learn them.
Sure.
They're not only important for the wildlife, but they're important for your timber, too. Then hickories.
Mm-hmm.
You know, could go north and be shagbark dominant or stay down here and be a little bit different, be pignut hickories. Or then we go into east is what I think of the next one, looking at the notes. Tulip poplar, mentioned that. It could be beech.
Sweet gum down south.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of a little bit of a cooler north slope-ish American beech in a lot of the mid-Atlantic to northern states. You get a lot of that.
Yep.
You know what I did see this week, and I hadn't told you, I actually sent a picture to your brother because I butt dialed him on the consultation as I was taking a picture. But anyhow, American chestnut. So,
oh, yeah.
There was some trees, you know, they're not obviously the big, large monarch trees.
Or stump sprouts.
Died, yep. We've seen a couple different stump sprouts on a property. One of the sprouts was on, I don't think, probably 8-inch diameter, DBH. Biggest one that I had seen. And then down low, it had a lot of sprouts, and it looked like it was starting to succumb to some blight.
Yeah.
But all in all, it was great, great. Just it's neat to see it because you don't see it that often. But it's hanging on heavily.
As hard as it is, best it can. It's hanging on. But by golly, we just keep planting them Chinese versions, don't we?
Just keep on trying.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, and so it's just hopefully it's a good reminder to people and inspiring that you know anybody can do this. You got a phone in your hand. We all spend too much time on them anyway. Let's be a little bit more productive with them and learn some of these plants and species that are living on our farm, and so we can either promote them, enhance them, or we can remove them. And
definitely.
You know, I think once you just start trying to simplify everything and say, okay, green is good species, red is bad, and you just start, okay, I know orchard grass or tall fescue or this shrub, autumn olive, bush honeysuckle is red, and so you just kind of simplify your site. You could see a whole lot of red and go, "Woo, I got work to do." Or you could say, you know, here's a species, there's a species, there's a species, there's a species, and you're like, man, there's a whole bunch of different species living around here, and they're all native. Well, that's great. You've got some diversity. But when invasives are present, you can probably go, man, I'm seeing the same species over and over and over. I need to get rid of it.
Well, and for instance, this specific property wasn't, it's going to sound weird when I say this, but it wasn't like overrun with invasive species. However, the other day, I don't know if this number is 100% right, but I followed up with a text after I left the property and said, hey, you know, just in the meantime, before you get the plan, you're asking, you know, what are some things I can do immediately and start working on removing invasives before you, in specific key areas. Anyhow, it wasn't overrun like I've seen before.
Yeah.
But he had, I believe it was 9 different types of invasive non-native species on the place.
Hmm.
Nine different, just.
Not counting the non-natives that are adapted or just kind of considered that they're okay. Actual
non-native
invasives.
Aggressive invasive species, correct.
Yeah,
yep.
Fun.
Nine different types.
Oof.
So you've got to be, but again, you could walk around that place, and if you don't know what you're looking at, you do a couple wrong things, and that 9 different species takes over your 20 different native species, and you don't
or you end up just
anymore.
Killing everything and killing some of your natives that are the seed source.
Oh,
did
yeah.
you get Tyler Ross, our buddy Tyler Ross, on the phone? Broken arrow.
No.
Broken arrow. Kill it all. Bomb it.
Yeah. Kill it all. Yeah. So, you know, but again, that's just another example to reiterate what it is we're talking. You got to know what you're looking at.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Got to.
Guys, hopefully you enjoyed it. So many great things to do in the woods right now before ticks get too awful bad. Hopefully they're not bad in your part of the world. They are bad in some places, but it'll only get worse as summer progresses. Go over to our YouTube channel. Check it out. We've got a bunch of videos going on. We're putting them on Facebook too, but we'd really appreciate it if you'd watch them on YouTube and subscribe over there. Matt, I'm good.
Comment, like, share. Yep. And be sure, guys, to check out our good buddies over at Niangua Coffee as well. Give them like and share on social media. Check out their different types of coffee that they offer. Just fantastic dudes over there. Give them some time. Give them some love. And appreciate you guys listening and following along to this week. This is the stuff that changes properties for generations. It's not a food plot. It's nothing that's super cool, but passing on this type of knowledge makes huge long-term impact. So this is why we're so passionate about it and appreciate you guys listening and follow along to that passion. So thank y'all.
Yep.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.